This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, it's time for our weekly Wisconsin News Roundup, where we check in with reporters around the state about the stories they're covering. First, the Crossroads Care Center nursing home in Green Bay is in the final stages of closing down. Its 42 residents have had to relocate to other facilities in the area. Megan Stringer is Streetwise reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin. She wrote about this for the Green Bay Press Gazette. Megan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this Crossroads Care Center announced it would be closing down last month. We've seen other nursing homes closing down in recent years. What do we know about why this particular facility in Green Bay is shutting down?
Yeah, so I spoke with Aaron Topper. He's the director of operations for the Crossroads Company in Wisconsin. And he said in this case, the money just isn't there. It would have been a financial strain to keep this home open. And in this particular case as well, this is the Green Bay East home of the Crossroads Company closing in Green Bay. They do have a Green Bay West home in Green Bay as well. So in this particular situation, as Aaron Topper told me, it made sense for them to consolidate their costs. Most of the staff will be moving from the closing home over to their other one, and some of the residents will be relocating there as well.
When something like this happens, what kind of timeline does it have for, in this case, the 42 residents who had been living there?
So the state, in this case, set 90 days for relocating all the residents. That number can vary depending on the size of the home, however many residents are there. And in this case, they had 90 days to relocate those 42 residents.
And this isn't the only nursing home to close recently in the Green Bay area. What have we seen out there and elsewhere around the state?
So nursing homes have been closing rapidly across Wisconsin. In 2019, especially, there were 17 homes that closed. That's according to Leading Age Wisconsin, which is an advocacy nonprofit. And so that's an increase from 2018 when just 5 homes closed in the state. The homes have been closing increasingly, I'm told, because of a low Medicaid reimbursement rate as well as a staffing shortage throughout Wisconsin for long-term care staff.
Megan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Megan Stringer is the Streetwise reporter for the Wausau Daily Herald. She works for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. She wrote about the Crossroad Nursing Home in Green Bay for the Green Bay Press Gazette. Now, the State Department of Natural Resources is directing Johnson Controls to expand its testing of private wells in the Marinette area due to PFAS chemicals from the company's subsidiary Tyco Fire Products making their way into the groundwater supply. Danielle Kading is a WPR reporter based in Superior. Danny, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Rob, for having me.
Can you give us some background, Danny, on the issue of these pollutants, these PFAS pollutants they're called, and this company in Marinette?
Yeah, so PFAS are forever chemicals, which means that they don't break down easily in the environment, and they've raised concerns because of harmful health effects that have been associated with it, like cancer or thyroid disease or high cholesterol. And Tyco is a Marinette manufacturer of firefighting foam, and they first reported contamination to the DNR in 2017 of these chemicals, then that they thought it might have spread from their facility. But state records show that Tyco actually had knowledge or test results of contamination at its fire training center back in 2013.
What's the DNR now ordering the company to do?
Well, the DNR issued 2 letters to Tyco and Johnson Controls this week. One basically says that they're expanding the area that Tyco has to investigate for contamination around its facility, as well as the number of PFAS chemicals that they have to test for in drinking water wells. The other says that Johnson Controls and Tyco have to sample drinking water wells nearby 61 fields in Marinette County. And so that's basically what they're working on this week.
What does this look like from a resident's perspective in this area being tested, especially if they rely on well water?
Yeah, so for residents by these affected fields, they can expect to be contacted by Johnson Controls or Tyco pretty soon. Maybe they already have been. Sampling near these fields is slated to begin in early March. And for those living in the expanded area around Tyco's training facility, they can expect to be contacted sometime in the next couple weeks and sampling for drinking water wells around the training center is expected to begin in April.
Have we heard anything, Danny, from the company itself since this DNR order about how they're going to respond?
No. Johnson Controls has said that they are reviewing the communications from the DNR.
Now, John Nygren, a top Republican in the state assembly, represents this area. What has he had to say about this ongoing issue?
Well, Representative Nygren had basically conveyed that while he's happy to see that Johnson Controls and Tyco are moving forward on testing farm fields in the area, that he's disappointed that it took months for them to come to an agreement with the DNR to move forward on this. And in the meantime, people are waiting in the wings wondering whether or not they have safe, clean drinking water.
And did I read in your story, Danny, at least some people are eligible to say, hey, Johnson Control, we need some bottled water while we're figuring this out?
Yes. Any affected landowner or homeowner that would be nearby wells can contact Tyco or Johnson Controls to have bottled water.
Danny, thanks a lot for bringing us up to date.
Thanks, Rob.
Danielle Kading is a WPR reporter based in Superior. She was with us to discuss the DNR ordering Johnson Controls to do more testing for PFAS chemicals in private wells in the Marinette area. Coming up, our news roundup continues with an update on a squadron of F-35 fighter jets potentially coming to an airfield in Madison. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our Wisconsin news roundup. The Air Force released its final study on the environmental impacts of stationing a squadron of F-35 fighter jets at Madison's Truax Field. A final decision on where those jets will ultimately go is yet to come. Chris Hubbock covers energy and the environment for the Wisconsin State Journal. Chris, welcome back to the show.
It's my pleasure.
We have this Air Force final environmental impact study out this week. They looked at noise levels, the amount of flights, big areas of concern. What kind of things did we hear in this big report about the local concerns?
I think the number one takeaway from this final study is that it wasn't much different than the draft study that we saw last fall. They included an appendix where they summarized a lot of the questions and concerns and provided some answers. But those were mostly, here's why we didn't include this in the final report.
What do we know about where this Madison Airport is on the priority list for these F-35 fighters?
Nothing has changed there. Madison is still the top pick out of the five cities, five bases, National Guard bases that are under consideration for this next squadron. Madison is still their top pick. But then again, this EIS wasn't really designed to come up with an answer. That's up to the Secretary of the Air Force, who will use this environmental document to inform her decision.
What do we know about why the Air Force likes this Madison airfield?
It checks a lot of the boxes in terms of runway length. It's got, it has a base that is suitable for what they want to do with these jets.
Let's talk a little bit about something we've talked about, I think, in the past, the pros and cons as locals see it. What are the positive reactions you're hearing in the Madison area, first of all?
I mean, the supporters all along have said, one, that there's some economic impact to this. There would be new construction. It would add some jobs, about 64 jobs, I believe, including some new pilots as well as a lot of support staff. And I think the primary concern is that if the 115th Fighter Wing doesn't get these jets, that some point down the road they could lose their mission as their 32-year-old F-16s just become too decrepit to fly. That somehow that mission could go away, and with it the significant economic impact that having that flight wing here provides.
For critics, what are they worried about? We've mentioned noise, but can you amplify those concerns a little?
Yeah, I mean, noise is a huge one. That this would increase sort of the radius around the airport where those sort of what could be considered intolerable noise levels would be felt. There's the concern that this disproportionately affects low-income minority populations who tend to live in some of those neighborhoods around the airport. That this could affect property values. I think in the Air Force's own estimates was about up to close to 0.3% of the county's tax base, which adds up to like $190 million worth of lost property value. That, and then there's some concerns about how the National Guard is going to deal with existing PFAS pollution on the base, especially as they undertake a lot more construction. And I think then there are also just people who just don't like the idea of more militarization.
And for the noise side of things, there are federal noise reduction programs available for people who live near these kinds of sites. You looked into this, though, and found that for some people, anyway, old easements might make them not eligible. What's going on there?
Yeah, back in the 90s, the airport was doing a runway expansion project, and they went and used a federal program to essentially give people $2,000 to give up their rights to complain or to take part in future kind of noise mitigation programs. But that was 20 plus years ago. Some of those people sold their homes, and the people who bought them weren't aware of the easement. There were some homes that were built in the interim, and the people who bought them weren't aware. And so they're suddenly, you know, several hundred people finding out that, oh, well, there might be a program available, but you might not be eligible to get any more federal funding because those rights have been signed away.
This final environmental impact statement was just one of many steps in this process. What is the timeline now, as far as we know, for when the Air Force will ultimately come out with their decision?
What they've said is that they plan to publish their final EIS in the Federal Register by the 28th. So that's a week from today. And that would trigger a 30-day waiting period before the Secretary of the Air Force can issue a final decision. So I guess we'd be looking for that towards the end of March.
Chris, thanks a lot for joining us again.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Chris Hubbock covers energy and the environment for the Wisconsin State Journal. He talked with us today about the Air Force's final environmental impact study on stationing a squadron of F-35 jets in Madison. He also closed out our weekly Wisconsin News Roundup. Coming up after the news, we'll look at the decline of executive assistants and secretaries and what those jobs have meant over the years for women without college degrees. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. There was a time when being an executive assistant or a personal secretary was a respected and sought-after career goal for many women, and it came with challenges and rewards.
It's your decision. You promoted him. You tell me why.
Well, in the first place, see, Bob does have a college degree.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. While he's away at college getting his precious, useless degree, I'm working my butt off at this company.
And in the second place, he does have a family to support.
And I don't? What has that got to do with anything?
Violet, look, my hands are tied here. The company needs a man in this position.
While we're on the topic of decorum, I'd like to speak with you about the way I'm being addressed.
Could you be more specific?
The switchboard. I'm not John. I'm Mr. Hooker.
That's the way they've been taught to address the secretaries.
Yes. Well, as I've explained, in Great Britain...
A truck is a lorry and an elevator is a lift. I've got it, Mr. Hooker. Despite your title, you are not a secretary.
I'm Mr. Price's right arm. I'm not his typist.
Of course.
Without a woman to keep them in line, all men, even lawyers and general officers, would be lost.
Executive assistants there in 9 to 5, Mad Men and Perry Mason. But just like the similar path in manufacturing for men without a college degree, these jobs traditionally held by women are in rapid decline. Rachel Feinzig covers management trends and chief executives for the Wall Street Journal. You can find her recent article titled The Vanishing Executive Assistant at WPR.org/Central Time. Rachel, good to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, the decline in manufacturing jobs. This has been front page news all over the place. A factory closes. We know about it. You're telling a story that has happened under the surface in a lot of the ways. Can you tell us about the numbers, first of all, in this decline of this job category?
Yeah, it's about 1.6 million people, mostly women. It's about a 95% female workforce. That's since 2000. Even just in the last 5 years, I think it's about a 23% decline. Those are for executive assistants specifically. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics is projecting a 20% decline over the next decade or so. So the numbers are really substantial, but it's been very quiet compared to, like you said, all the news that we see about losses in manufacturing.
Why is that? These are big numbers. This is a big drop. And I got to admit, Rachel, your piece was the first time I'd ever seen anything about this trend.
I think part of it is that it's kind of happened in drips and drabs. It's really pervasive across the country. Some data that I looked at showed that there was really not any metropolitan area in the country that hadn't seen a decline in these jobs. So whereas when a factory closes, it's one factory. A lot of people lose their jobs in one go. It can be big news. This has happened quietly in drips and drabs, a few assistants here, a few assistants there, kind of under the radar.
Talk about what these kind of jobs entail. For some of us in some lines of work, we might have not have encountered this job category.
Yeah, I know. Consider me in that group. I was sometimes jealous hearing about the responsibilities of these people because it does make your working life a lot easier. I mean, some of it is booking meetings, booking flights. Some people read, you know, an executive's email. They're the ones kind of doing that first touch on everything. Sometimes it's higher level stuff, helping with board meetings, kind of bigger picture projects. But some assistants told me that the work has kind of changed over the years as these jobs have been eroded.
And let's talk about who's doing these jobs. We think about manufacturing jobs as historically, for a long time anyway, an opportunity for men in particular, by the numbers with high school degrees but not college degrees, to actually make a decent living. Is this a similar thing but mainly for women?
Yes, exactly. So one researcher called these pink collar jobs. You didn't have to go to college. It was about a 95% female workforce. And you could make a good living. You could make six figures, especially in a place like New York City. And I mean, that's still true for some people. But salaries seem to be declining for a lot of women that I talk to. And companies are increasingly saying, I want someone with a college degree.
Now, with those manufacturing jobs, we know some of the job loss sometimes is outsourcing to other regions, other countries. Sometimes it's, there's technology, fewer workers can get more work done. What's happening here? What's happening to chase these executive assistant jobs away?
Yeah, all of those things. I mean, sometimes it's just doing more with less, or executives kind of changing their habits, being more self-sufficient, not needing as many of these folks. In some cases, like in Ernst & Young, who I profile in the story, they were actually hiring people in low-cost areas and kind of through attrition or occasionally layoffs, getting rid of people in some of their bigger offices. And those people in low-cost areas were working remotely for executives back in these big main offices.
Talking to Rachel Feinzig from The Wall Street Journal, looking at her piece, The Vanishing Executive Assistant, about a big decline, but really under the radar in a job category that provided, in many cases, good-paying jobs, mainly for women. Rachel, you profiled some of the women in particular who have been through this change, who had these jobs and lost them. Can you share some of what you heard from them?
Yes. I mean, that was the most, gratifying and in some cases heartbreaking part of the reporting. Some of these women, after being employed for decades, at the same company, were now bouncing around from job to job. They had kind of seen the office change, there were no more papers to be filed. There were no landlines to be picked up. And they were kind of, struck by that as they went into new workplaces. And then oftentimes they were let go fairly fast. Some of them were doing jobs that required manual labor, working at Trader Joe's or as a, ride-hailing person. So jobs that really make a lot less money and come with a lot less security, too, if you're talking about contractors.
And the women who were executive assistants or secretaries to high-level managers, in many ways, it seems like they're often the power behind the throne. Now, one commenter on the Wall Street Journal to your article I'm quoting here said, I remember my first real job and my best new client had one of these executive assistants, and she ran the place, the most important person to know if you wanted to get anything done or see the owner. Is that something you encountered, that memory of that executive assistant being a key kind of part of the management of a workplace?
Totally. I mean, and in some cases, they still are like the gatekeepers. I did a story 5 years ago or 6 years ago about executive assistants called the most powerful person in the office. And I think at the highest levels of big companies that could still be the case. I think you're seeing people, you're not going to have the CEO of a Fortune 10 company that doesn't have an executive assistant. And I definitely heard from even recently retired partners at places like Ernst & Young who said, like, this person was running my life, or this person made connections to other executive assistants at clients that, like, established a rapport that I could not have done myself that got me into a meeting. So I still think there's a lot of value in these people. And in the work that they do, I think it's very important. But yes, I think that has changed. I think a lot of people feel like the up-and-coming generation of managers doesn't need these people. They'd rather book a flight by themselves. They don't know how to use them. I talked to one woman who told me she was relieved, a manager who told me she was relieved when she was not assigned an executive assistant at a new job. So I think a lot of this is evolving.
We heard from Lynn on Facebook who says, in our area, these positions are being filled by male analysts, and the complaint is they don't do half the work but are paid money that women are denied. Have you seen that kind of trend when it comes to these jobs being replaced by something similar but different and maybe by men?
Yes, I've heard of the idea that business analyst is being added to these responsibilities. So it's almost like they're hiring for like two or three job descriptions, you know, expecting people to do like data stuff that maybe they wouldn't have done before. And again, screening people out by requiring a college degree. In terms of men versus women, the numbers are still about 95% female, and they've been that way for a while now. I haven't seen a huge change there, but it's certainly possible that it's becoming, you know, that there's more gender diversity as they kind of change what they're looking for and kind of veer away from some of these women who had been in the job for decades.
Did you run into any examples where companies or industries were working to retrain these executive assistants for other, maybe a similar or evolved jobs, or finding other ways to use their skills and talents, or did you not run into that?
That's a good question. I mean, at EY, no, like they did not offer to move these women who had long worked in these main offices. They did not offer to move them to these remote centers. They just hired new people. Often it seemed like they were younger, although the company says they were not specifically hiring younger workers, as that would be illegal. But I have not seen any huge retraining efforts. EY says that they kind of give people the opportunity to then grow within the organization, these newer people who are coming into these remote centers. So maybe that kind of flicks at the idea, but I have not seen widespread efforts to retrain these kind of the veteran executive assistants for new work.
And that phenomenon you're talking about, the remote workers basically doing these executive assistant functions, what kind of cities around the country are we seeing these? They almost sound like call centers, but doing this job of executive assistants.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of them all together in lower cost areas. I think there was one in New Orleans, and they're kind of serving executives in all different time zones. So you might be working in Louisville, but you're supporting a manager in Chicago, and you probably never see the manager or the executive face to face. So it's definitely a different dynamic than kind of that secretary who sat outside your office in the Mad Men days, you know, Peggy and Don Draper, or I guess Peggy was never on Don's desk, but you get the idea.
Is there any indication that this is going to turn around anytime soon, or are the trends just pointing toward fewer and fewer of this kind of job in the future?
I mean, the BLS is projecting further job loss here, so I think we'll probably expect to see more of the same. I mean, I would be, you know, I'm on the hunt. I'm interested to hear if anyone is saying, no, this is too much. This is cutting too close to the bone. We want these people back. I'm keeping an eye out for that. But the macro level trend seems to be more decline.
Rachel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Rachel Feinzeig covers management trends and chief executives for the Wall Street Journal. She previously covered bankruptcy and restructuring. You can find her recent article titled The Vanishing Executive Assistant. We've got that link to WPR.org/Central Time. And if you have experiences with this or have seen these changes in your own line of work, if you were an executive assistant or personal secretary yourself at some point in your career, or you employed one, What kind of things did you see? What has changed over the years? You can let us know on the Ideas Network Facebook page.